Welcome to the Quest Podcast, proudly presented by the Muscular Dystrophy Association as part of the Quest family of content. I'm your host, Mindy Henderson. Together, we are here to bring thoughtful conversation to the neuromuscular disease community and beyond about issues affecting those with neuromuscular disease and other disabilities and those who love them. We are here for you to educate and inform, to demystify, to inspire, and to entertain. We are here shining a light on all that makes you, you. Whether you are one of us, love someone who is, or are on another journey altogether, thanks for joining. Now let's get started. Welcome to my guest today, Paul Robertson. Paul is the founder and owner of Fishing for MD, and he's recently built a home to meet his own accessibility needs and has agreed to join me today to discuss accessibility from a residential perspective. Paul, I'm so excited to have you here today. I actually also built my own home with an eye to accessibility for my wheelchair, and I'm really excited to hear about your very recent building adventures.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, thanks for having us on today, Mindy. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your condition and how it affects your mobility, if you don't mind?
Sure, no problem at all. So I live in Maryland. I'm in my early 50s. And I noticed about 20 years ago that I was having, you know, some issues going on with my legs and so forth, you know, with mobility and, you know, starting to, trip, slip and fall a little bit and a few problems. So, anyhow, as time progressed, you know, I'm a father of four. I was an athletic coach with my kids, grew up in Maryland, always around boating and fishing my whole life. And as time went on, I had a successful business that I ran. I still own the business today. I have a team of people who are running the business so I can spend the majority of my time within Fishing for MD.
Nice.
So anyhow, basically what happened to me was I decided after a pretty bad fall, you know, one of many, you know, from having, I have limb girdle muscular dystrophy type 2J, which really affects your quads, hips, and then you're starting to affect the shoulders and your upper arms, you know, the trunk muscles of your body, sort of a deterioration of muscle fibers and obviously strength. And then that leads to flexibility issues and other things as well. But, you know, to give you just a real short story on how Fishing for MD started, I had planned to put together a professional competitive offshore fishing team prior to really finding out how bad this muscular dystrophy was. And I ended up putting that business plan on the shelf and I had shared it with a business advisor. And I spoke to him about 6 years ago after taking a really bad fall. And, you know, he said, how's everybody doing? How's the family? How's the business? And everything. You know, of course, I'm good, good, good. Everything's good. He said, how are you doing? And I said, I'm really not doing well at all. I said, I took another fall, you know, on my way to work and I kind of lost it. You know, you have one of those, or maybe more than one of those moments in life where you just sort of hit bottom.
Sure.
And I hit bottom and I just said, I'm done. I don't want to do anything anymore. I'm finished. And he said to me, he said, what did you ever do with that competitive offshore fishing team that you wanted to start? And I said, well, I kind of put that business plan on the shelf. You know, I've been busy with coaching kids, my business, family, and friends. And he just said, have I ever hung the phone up on you? And I said, no, what is that all about? You know, this is a guy I look up to and I respect. And he said, dreams expire. And all I heard was a dial tone. And I'm like, wow, that was like, what the heck just happened here?
Wow.
So long story short, I ended up writing a letter about 3 or 4 days later to the CEO of the MDA. And I said, hey, I have this business plan, this idea to do a fishing team, put changing the spin on it now. What I'd like to do is, for lack of a better word, have your endorsement to go out and build this team and sort of a co-brand with MDA where we could generate an opportunity to raise funds and awareness for those affected with muscular dystrophy and help support the Muscular Dystrophy Association. So that's sort of what we've done over the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, we've been very fortunate to use the branding of the team and the events and the tournaments that we go to and our trucks and boats and all the different things that we do and parlay that into different fundraising events. And, you know, we've created a pretty large awareness for muscular dystrophy in the boating and fishing community, which a lot of people don't realize. Boating and fishing from an economic standpoint out in the marketplace is larger than golf and tennis combined.
Oh, wow.
So it's a huge demographic market out there, billions of dollars a year. And we've been able to go out and create that awareness within the fishing community and boating community about muscular dystrophy, where a lot of people never really put a lot of attention or thought a lot about muscular dystrophy. And that's allowed us to parlay that into hosting. I've hosted four galas for the Muscular Dystrophy Association, which has raised about $2.1 million. We do a boat raffle and give away a boat. Now we're giving away a truck and a golf cart every year. We're on our fifth one right now. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's generating six figures of funding back to Muscular Dystrophy Association from our organization. And that was really my goal, was to be a $1 million donor or fundraiser for muscular dystrophy. Some of it we donate, some of it I do events with MDA, like the gala and so forth. And, and you know, through my colleagues and associates generate events. So that's sort of where we are and what we've done. We've reached a lot of families, met a lot of friends, and just super excited to be out, you know, living our dream and doing, you know, what we like to do, boating and fishing, and finding a good cause that can come out of it with good results. So that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, no, that is fantastic. And congratulations on all of the success. And, you know, I think honestly, anytime you're going through something hard, you know, we've all got adversity and struggles that we go through. And I think that having a purpose is something that can really turn things around for you and get you into a different mindset. So I'm clapping my hands. You can't see me, but I'm high-fiving you and clapping my hands for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate it. And we've met so many people, you know, affected with muscular dystrophy. And, you know, it's just amazing how many people come up to us at the marinas and the tournaments. And when we're towing the boat and trailers up and down the highway and we stop at the truck stops and they come over, oh, my mom, my cousin, my aunt, my son, my friend has muscular dystrophy. And, you know, it's we've really touched a lot of people. And I have a soft spot for the kids with muscular dystrophy. So I have probably about 15 or 20 kids that I've really developed a special bond and friendship with them and their families across the country. And, you know, we try and send them our shirts and stickers and hats and, you know, stay in touch with them. And it's been good. It's been a great outreach opportunity to build awareness for muscular dystrophy. And, you know, we've found ways to turn it into, you know, fundraising, which is a lot of things that as we know, make the opportunity to go out and have kids summer camp. That's what we try and fund with a lot of the stuff that we do, and obviously research and grants and treatments and so forth.
Yeah. Well, you've got a generous spirit, and you're absolutely right. There's so many people out there who are affected by neuromuscular disease. And so again, I just commend you for all you've done.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's talk about accessibility in architecture in this house that you built. You built a home recently from the ground up, correct?
We did. So I live right outside of the DC Baltimore area, but we've always had a home on the Chesapeake Bay, which became really difficult to navigate. It was a second home. We actually just recently sold it. And my summer roots as a child in my younger days was in Ocean City, Maryland, on the coast of Maryland, right on the ocean. And we have a family house here. And the last 4 or 5 years, we've done a lot of events out of this area. And I was staying here at the family house that we grew up in. And it just became more and more strenuous for me to navigate, you know, a lot of stairs, a lot of steps, you know, bathtubs, showers, et cetera, low toilets, all different kinds of things. So finally, it just got to the point that I, you know, was talking with my family, and I just said, you know, we're going to have to do something different, because I can't navigate this house. So I actually went into this mindset that I needed to go into a condo. I got to go to a condo and I can park underneath and get in the elevator and go straight up and life will be great. Well, I thought that was going to happen. And, you know, we kind of looked at some different condos and found some stuff that we thought would work. And one of the deals fell through, and I was talking to a friend of mine who actually ended up building this new house. And he's also a boater and fisherman and everything else. And I was having dinner with he and his wife one night, and I was sort of complaining about this deal that fell through on the condo, and he's a home builder by trade. And he said to me, he said, why don't you just find a lot? Let me build a house that works for you. And I think 3 days later, we bought one of the last 7 or 8 waterfront lots in Ocean City, Maryland. And, you know, my wife and I and kids embarked on, let's build a house. We went from having a family house that was hard to navigate to thinking it was a condo to then let's build a house. And then that obviously then opened up the whole discussion. Well, what do we need out of a house? You know, what right. are the things that we need, and how does a house work, you know, for Paul? And so that's kind of how we got to, you know, where we were. And then we hired an architect.
I want to stop you right there and ask you about your builder and your architect. So it sounds like you had a friend. I don't know if that friend ended up being your builder or if you had to go on a quest to find someone.
He ended up being the builder, and okay. which really, really worked out well. And he's built about 10,000 houses. So, all over the Eastern Seaboard. So he's, very, very involved. They've done big developments. They've done custom homes and so forth. And, you know, the interesting thing, and, you know, so we sort of had the builder and we had his on-site superintendent, and we hired an architect. And that was a challenge a little bit in itself too, because, you know, a lot of, and I think a lot of people with muscular dystrophy can probably relate to this. There's no one thing that helps us navigate, move better, prevent falls, slips, trips. Right. We're all a little different with how this disease affects us. Hmm. And, you know, naturally, you know, like for example, if I fall, naturally everybody runs over and they want to grab your arm and pick you up. Sure. And I'm like, no, doesn't work that way. And yeah. No, just give me your hand and I'll pull you up. And I'm like, no, that's, you know, we don't move that way. So right. I think that when you first have that conversation with the builder and architect, they naturally just think to themselves, oh yeah, I got it. No problem. You know, we'll put a grab bar here or a handle here and you'll be good. But once they really get to know, and that was the fortunate thing for me, I spent a lot of time while they were building the house here, and, you know, we made modifications along the way and some things we just said, hey, we're going to figure these out while we're building mm-hmm. because we're not sure what height, what, you know, to put things. And, you know, a lot of trial by error, you just had to sort of get in there and figure it out.
Right. So let me ask you this, you know, it sounds like you kind of had an inroad because of your builder friend, but let's say, you know, there are probably people out there who don't know builders, don't know architects. And so before we get into the actual building and how you made this home accessible for yourself, let's talk a little bit about kind of the journey to find a builder and or an architect. What would be your advice there for someone who's listening, who's got the same kind of accessibility needs as you and me, but maybe have never worked with a builder or an architect before and don't know how to look for the right one?
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, referral and word of mouth is usually, in my world, is always the best. I mean, if you can get a referral, that's the best thing. I think at the end of the day, I feel like the builder that we had really cared. And if you could find someone that really cares about you and will listen to you and not just make it feel like it's just another house, I think that's really important. How you go about that, you know, there's thousands of builders out there, you know, no doubt. Obviously, mm-hmm. in the last, you know, 2 years, it's been, or really last year, the supply chain issues have been a big deal. So that was, we were just kind of on the front end of that, but I can see where that would be could have been a real problem with a lot of people.
Right.
Had they been a little bit later. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, working with a reputable builder, sitting mm-hmm. down, talking with them, you know, they almost need to get to realize that this is going to be a special, different kind of a home that you're going to either, you know, renovate or build depending upon what you do.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if it's easier just to renovate something than to build it from the ground up. But
right. Probably pluses and minuses to both.
Yeah, it depends. And I mean, you know, budgets come into play and things are built different. And I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, word of mouth. I think it's almost like you want, even though our builder's done all of this stuff, he's done it over many, many years. He was only doing, I would say, you know, a handful of what I will call custom homes. He was doing a lot of the production, you know, the big builder homes, going in and building homes for the, you know, the big national names that we know.
Yeah.
But I think that you don't want someone that's just trying to churn out, you know, quantity of homes. I think you really need a specialty builder, and you need somebody that's going to take the time to understand,
yeah,
that you're going to need some special accommodations.
And I'll say that, you know, when we found our builder, this was years ago, but, you know, we approached it kind of problem by problem, which it sounds like you did too. And I had sort of a list of non-negotiables that I personally needed, like how wide I needed my doors to be, what height I needed my light switches to be, you know, those sorts of things. And when we went and spoke to the builder for the first time, we went through all of those things to make sure that they were things that they could accommodate and get creative about. Was your approach similar?
It was for some of the things it was, and obviously some of the things we learned and added in later. True. But I think definitely, you know, one of the things that we just talked about constantly, you know, we have a lot of outdoor deck space on multiple levels. And I said, you know, I can't have a step down or a step up on the deck. And there was a whole conversation about water flashing and water penetration. How do you keep the water out if you have, you know, usually like my primary residence outside of DC, when you step out of the deck, you step down 2 or 3 inches. And that's designed naturally to keep water penetration out of the house. So,
right.
So that was an early on conversation that we had, and they had to really figure out how they were going to do that. But I, you know, I'm not in a wheelchair. I do walk with a cane. I do have a mobility scooter if I go to, you know, events, or, you know, if I went to a mall, or if I went to a football game or a concert or whatever it may be, or, you know, if I'm traveling, I'll take that with me. But I'm still, you know, I'm upright mobile, but I'm not mobile without a cane or without holding onto someone's shoulder. My balance is a little off. And just that little step to step in is problematic. And I wanted to be able to, you know, walk outside and, you know, if I wanted to hold a plate in one hand and my cane in the other and walk in from the grill, I wanted to be able to do that. And I can't do that in my home outside of the DC area. So, so anyhow, that was, there were some things like that, like you said, non-negotiables that you just had to do. And we can get into the construction and some things that I did, but the grade issues, you know, we're at the beach, so we're kind of at elevation zero, I call it, you know, not zero, you know, we're flat near the ocean, I would say. And there was just some things related to the grade of the driveway and perimeter of the house. And everybody kept saying, it's too flat, you can't do it. I said, well, we got to figure out a way. It has to be flat.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I think that you have to be really comfortable and get into a mindset of knowing that you're going to need to advocate for yourself and be a little bit assertive, because, you know, builders have codes and standards and things that they're held to, but, you know, what I found was that if you push them a little bit, they can get creative and figure out how to solve those problems.
Yeah. When they dug the foundation, they do what they call the wall check, where they have the inspector from the city or the town come, and before they pour the flat slab, he came and he said, that's absolutely not right. And they said, no, it's right per the plans that were submitted. He goes, it's impossible. You can't do anything like that. And so lo and behold, they made us hire an engineer to come back a second time, reshoot all of our elevation grades and prove to them that it was right. Because they just hadn't seen it before. It was something new.
Exactly.
And you know, you had to go through that. And it was frustrating at the time because you knew you were right. But you still had, to go prove it to the inspectors. But
of course. But I think, you know, to your earlier point, if you find someone who, you know, when you're kind of interviewing people who, you know, strikes you as compassionate and creative and all of that, I think, you know, usually these things can be worked out, right?
Absolutely. Our builder was great. I mean, I never was really told, well, you can't do that. It was like, let's figure out how to do it.
I love
that. I think that's a good mindset to go in with a builder. If you're interviewing a builder, you're talking to a builder, I think you can ask questions like, you know, what obstacles were you up against in one of your prior homes where an owner said they have to have something done a certain way, and everybody scratched their head and initially said, that's not how you do it, or you can't do it. And then you ended up doing it that way. How did you do that? Because that's, you know, us who are living with disabilities, you'd never realize, I guess, or I think people without disabilities, they always realize you have a disability. But like I said earlier, they don't realize everybody's disability is a little different and it affects you differently and how you get up off the floor if you can.
The little subtleties of daily life can,
exactly,
can really be different. So would you mind, I'd love to hear more about what you actually did within your house, you know, some of the specifics that you did to make it accessible for you. I know you mentioned, you know, the decks and making sure that those thresholds were flat. What other sorts of things did you do?
Well, it really started from like when you show up to the house, I can kind of do a walkthrough from there. So one of the things that we did was and I kind of say, if you can picture a beach house on stilts, you know, a lot of people have seen those like in the Outer Banks, or yeah, you see this house and it's stilts and it's open underneath. Our house is sort of like that. It's a two-story house, but it's 10 feet off the ground what I did was on the ground level, it's all enclosed as part of the house. So the entire lower level is all garage.
Okay.
And what I wanted to be able to do was a couple of things. I wanted to have a concrete floor, which I had a special coating put on that has some grip resistance to it. Cause you know, obviously floor gets wet, you know, slips, trips and everything else. So I had a professional coating done on the floor where it has grip resistance, where I literally can pull my car into the driveway. I can open my door, get out of my car. And within about 6 feet of the car door is the elevator. And I have an elevator that takes me up. So when we designed the house for the architect, everything was built around the location of the elevator. Whereas most people design a house and then say, where can I put an elevator? Right. So for us, it was okay. The exact opposite.
That's a good tip.
Know? And I knew I wanted to pull in on the right side of the garage. So when I got out of the driver door, the elevator was there. I didn't want it the other way around. So that was kind of my beginning. The other thing, a lot of driveways and garages have a little lip, you know, like a 1-inch lip from the, where the concrete's a little higher. I was adamant I wanted that flat.
I did the same thing in my house. Yeah.
Flat, straight in. And I sort of was challenged a little bit with the builder on that because it was like, well, you need it elevated to keep the water out. I said, well, then we need a better seal on the bottom of the door and, you know, kind of back and forth. And we put a little eyebrow roof over the garage door so that the rain didn't get up against the doors as much. So that was one of the things that we did. And then I was really focused on flat garage and very minimal incline in our driveway. So that was, that was one thing that I did. And then I had the elevator. So then, you know, some other things that we did during the construction process. I put wood blocking in the walls everywhere. So there's extra wood all throughout the house at different elevations. And my thought process all was I had pulled so many handrails and towel bars and all kinds of stuff off the wall in you know, my years of living with this disability. There was nothing I was going to pull out of the wall in this house.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then I have video and pictures of where all of that is. So that if I come back and say, I want to put a handrail along this wall, you know, for when you're walking down the hall or whatever it may be, you know, it's not just find the stud and can you make it work? Yeah, you know, there's full wood blocking in the walls. So that was really important, obviously, especially in the bathrooms and everything else.
So smart. So it's wood blocking that you can't see, but it's in there in case you need to install a handrail.
Right. So if you can visualize, you know, before you put drywall or insulation on a wall, just the wood studs that are in a wall, then there's wood in between each stud. So basically what I did was I took, you know, from, I think it was 28 to 40 inches high and made these wood sections inside in between the wooden studs. Sounds like a lot. And sounds like, you know, when you do a lot of this stuff, I think a lot of people are like, oh, it's, you know, they see dollar signs, you know, more money, more money, more money.
No, it's so smart though, to think ahead that way.
It's certainly, you know, whether, and even if you just did it in a bathroom, you know, and obviously we did that, and you know, I could talk a little bit about my shower and bathroom and toilets and all that, but you know, putting all of that in. So that was one of the things that we did. I had designed where all of the toilets were going to be elevated. So for me, it's real challenging to get up off of a toilet unless I have something to push on and lean on.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I originally did was I designed like a 6-inch box on the floor, for lack of a better word, where the floor where the toilet was would be higher than the regular bathroom floor. To even though you can buy what I call an ADA toilet, they're still low to me.
Right.
So ironically, when we went and did our appliance selection at Ferguson Enterprise, a big national company, we were walking out of the showroom and my wife said, look at this toilet. It was literally right by the front door. And it was, I don't know how tall it was, but it's pretty darn tall. Yeah, I think one of my kids said my feet don't touch the ground.
Wow. Well,
so we got these really tall toilets. So that was something that I didn't have to build that box on the floor. But those were like ideas that were going through my mind. You know, how can I get off this toilet? So what I did, I made sure we have a bathroom in the garage and then we have a bathroom, you know, a couple on the second floor with bedrooms, the living area upstairs, our bedroom and so forth. I made sure that our bedroom and one on the second floor and one on the ground all have those three toilets. So wherever, if I need to use a restroom on any floor of the living space, I have the ability to use a tall toilet. So that was a big deal. And then having the wood blocking in the walls allowed us to put the handrails up. And then, you know, I was surprised, you know, you think of handrails and you think of, you know, you go in a commercial public bathroom and you see this, you know, silver handrail, and I've got them. You have had them installed before. You know, it just looks kind of like sterile, kind of hospital, kind of industrial.
Yeah.
I was surprised that the, I call them decorative grab bars and handrails that you can buy, that it's a few dollars more, but it's not ridiculously a lot more. And they look like they belong. They don't look like it was an after fact that somebody
That's so nice.
Said you need to put on. So for me, that was a big thing. I didn't want this house to scream disability. I guess that's the right word. I wanted it to be sort of built in and be a natural. There's six of us that live here. I'm the only one who has a disability. I didn't want it to be like, oh, this is built just for Paul. You know, I wanted it to look like a family house. So that was really important to me.
That was important to me too. And I told my builder that I wanted the house to be completely accessible, but I didn't want it to look like it was built to be accessible. And they did a great job.
Yeah. And that goes back to your communication with the builder and designer. And I'm a very hands-on person, so I was really involved a lot with it, you know, making sure things were right. One of the things that we did in our master shower, you know, I wanted a walk-in shower, you know, where you could just walk into it. And I've stayed in so many hotel rooms, and I'll request an ADA room. I was just in one recently at a fishing tournament we were doing.
Okay.
And I said, this is great that it's ADA, but when you get out of the shower, the entire floor by the toilet, everything is covered.
It's a swamp.
They call it a roll-in, and I'm like, it's a roll-in ADA, but it's the whole room is now wet. Like, so
I
did about a half inch threshold, which again was a point of discussion with everybody, and made sure that when we did our tile, we selected a tile that had good grip. You know, there's different gripness on tile for flooring and showers. And I wanted something that had a lot of grip, that when you were standing on it, if it was really wet for me, it would still be an issue. I'd probably slip and slide. And if you start slipping or sliding, you're probably going to go down in my condition. But I got a tile that has pretty good grip so that it helps to avoid that. But my shower, and you talked about 36 inch doors. I made sure, even though I'm not in a wheelchair today, I made sure that my shower had a 36 inch door that swung all the way open.
Yeah. And that's such a great point about, I mean, I know this is the second time you've mentioned that kind of thinking ahead, but I think it's so smart that you did that and you thought about, you know, what's it going to look like in 10, 20 years?
Right. And, you know, we oversized our shower a little bit. We built a built-in bench. So there's a bench. And, you know, naturally, I think a bench is normally like 18 to 20 inches. Well, this one's 24. Yeah, everything to me was get it up, get it a little higher. So, you know, we have that in there. And then we have a handheld device in there. And then we have the regular shower head. Again, those decorative grab bars that are in there. And they really don't, you know, they're all kind of dark brown and not that screaming industrial silver or whatever it is.
Right.
It just makes it look a lot nicer, I think. And,
yes.
And it doesn't scream, yeah, even for your own psyche, you know, because us people that are living with disabilities, obviously, you know, you don't want every time you go to do something, you just in the back of your head go, oh, well, you know, I can't do this the right way, or not the right way, but the way normal people or whatever do.
Yeah.
So if you kind of soften it up a little bit, then, you know, when you're using those devices, whether they're grab bars or whether they're, you know, the specific handle I put on the shower door so that I can close the glass shower door when I'm standing there and not have to reach out and slip or trip or fall. That was important. And I think those little things, you know, it doesn't scream then that, you know, oh, I'm doing this because I have a disability. I think it's good for your mental state and so forth.
I agree. Yeah. There would definitely be kind of a psychological impact to that, to not have it, you know, in your face all the time that you need special accommodations.
Right. When we did our shower, I made sure that we built in, you know, really good size wall niches where they were like, you know, notched into the wall for, you know, putting your shampoos or your soaps or whatever it may be. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I just find that, you know, put your grab bars on what you're going to grab and don't put anything else on the wall, if you can help it, that you're going to grab that's not supposed to be grabbed. Because if you do take a little slip, or, you know, you don't want to be grabbing a soap dish, you don't want to be grabbing a washcloth holder or whatever it may be.
Right.
Just to get that stuff in the niches. And then, you know, because if you do have to grab something real quick, you know, naturally, you're going to grab the first thing you see. Make sure whatever you're grabbing is going to hold.
Right.
Again, I go back to me. I've ripped so many things out of walls over the years that have to be careful. So that was Yeah. You know, in our master bath, we did that. The other thing, all of our bathroom vanities, again, I'm not in a chair. So again, it's a little different for some people, but they're all, I think they call it bachelor height is what the building terminology is. They're a little taller. So for me to lean over, you know, with weak quads and all, leaning over to a low counter is more challenging. So everything for us is like counter height, if you want to think of it that way.
I did that also. We've got two vanities in our master bath. One is higher for my husband. One is lower for me. And the one for me also has clearance. We took the cabinets out from underneath so I can drive up underneath it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So those are things to think about. And I think that the other thing I did, you know, it sounds crazy, but we had a set of cabinets in the master bath. And I said, I want to have a seat there. And they're like, what do you mean? And I have a built-in seat, and you know, teak is a big wood product that's used on boats. I said, I want a teak seat, a teak wooden seat that I can sit on literally just to kind of put my underwear on and kind of get things going. So that was just a little something. But when I built that seat, you know, I had to accommodate a taller set of cabinets next to it so I could put my hand on it and push and lean and get myself up, even though it was built up higher. So little things like that are all the things that we went through with the builder. But you know, that in the bathrooms was just a big deal. You know, the non-slip tile, the wood blocking in the walls, you know, making sure we had a wide entry into the shower, a low threshold that wouldn't get water out onto the floor, tall toilets. Those were all things. In our bathroom is just like our kitchen, you know, are two areas that we spend a lot of time in. And typically, at least, you know, where we are in our geographical area, the floors on those tend to be harder too. So they're not carpeted normally, you know, so if you do fall, you know, you're falling on a harder surface. And that's the one thing I've learned over the years. You know, I think that falling becomes really the scariest thing for me, at least. Like, you know, I've dealt with a lot of challenges and I can't navigate this, or I can't get in here, or I can't do that, or I can't climb these stairs. But the falls and, you know, I've taken a fair number of them. That's really probably the scariest thing, because, you know, I've had some instances where you do fall, and if you're alone, you might not get up for a while. You know, you might wait for help or whatever it may be. So again, back to the flooring, you know, that's usually our hardest floor. So you got to think about that. You know, how are you going to protect yourself? And those are some of the things that I did.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like you were incredibly thorough, but is there anything that you would do differently next time that you learned this time around?
I think, you know, it's funny, you know, people have brought that up to us, and, you know, they've come and they've looked at the house, and again, very fortunate, you know, where I am in my career, you know, I'm pushing into my middle 50s. I've had a successful business. So we sort of built this as our, I hate to use the word retirement home, because I feel like I'm too young to retire, but you know, we kind of built this as our last hurrah, if you would. So I think at the end of the day, I don't mean to say in and out of the park with what we did, but we really covered a lot of the things. And you know, we've only been moved in for a couple of months. So we're still getting our arms around everything, obviously. But for the most part, you know, for my disability with the way that I'm functioning, it's been pretty much spot on. So really, really happy with that.
That's so great. And honestly, I think one thing that I would encourage people to do is, if they're about to start building a home or working with a builder, you know, wherever you're living right now, I might keep a notebook with me for a day and write down, you know, from the time I wake up in the morning, you know, what struggles there are, what challenges there are, what problems I need to solve, and take that into the builder.
Right, right. And, you know, it's funny. One of the things that we learned, you know, again, this is a kind of a vacation home, but it's intended to be the permanent home, you know, as we transition. And, you know, in the suburban home that we have at home, you know, you have these grandiose master bedroom suites, and, you know, that's kind of what, you know, all the national builders, you know, it's kind of where we were, you know, development and everything else they build. And I think I had like 42 steps or something crazy to the toilet from the house. And now I have about 5.
Oh my gosh.
So it's amazing. As you get older, you need less.
Yes.
For when you're young, you're like, I need all this. I need the big, you know.
Exactly.
So, yeah, you know, little things like that. And, you know, like in our kitchen, we did, you know, for me, it was really important to have good accessibility in the kitchen. So one of the things that really jumps out when you walk in our kitchen is, you know, we have a double oven on the wall, and the top oven is a French door oven. And people look at it and they go, oh, that's really kind of cool looking. I haven't seen that. And then when, let me tell you why we did it. And the reason we did it is, you know, again, if you've got a disability and you struggle with balance or, you know, being upright or strength with your arms, whatever it may be, try leaning over a hot oven door that's folded down and taking something out of the oven.
Right.
But with the French doors, you literally open it up and you can walk right up to the oven or stand right next to the oven. Or you could roll right up to the oven if you're in a chair. And when you take that pan out of the oven, you're not leaning over that door.
I wouldn't have known that such a thing existed.
Yeah, it's pretty neat, you know, and it's just two doors. It's like two double doors, like two patio doors, French doors, if you think of it. And you grab one handle and they both open up and then you can get right to it. So
incredible.
So that was kind of something we did there. And then all of our kitchen cabinets, the lower portion of the cabinets are all big, deep drawers. So we didn't do the typical cabinet where you open the door, you know, you got to stand in front of it, open the door, you got to step back away from it. Then you got to kind of get down low and you got to reach in and pull out what you need. These are all drawers. So you can literally come right up next to it, have the drawer open, then you have accessibility to grab whatever you want. So,
amazing.
Yeah, I would encourage anybody, you know, who's doing a kitchen remodel or trying to make their kitchen more functional, if they've got a disability, think about doing all drawers. And some of these are big and deep, you know, they're, I don't know, 12, 18 inches deep. It doesn't, you know, it's not just like a silverware drawer. It's a drawer you put your pots or your pans or anything else in. That was something that we did. And then we had our kitchen table, which serves as our dining table, is the same height as the kitchen counter island.
So for
us, everything. And then again, it's kind of like the toilet. Get up higher where you don't have to force yourself to get up. When you sit down, you don't have to drop as low. And all of our chairs and bar stools, for lack of a better word, are all, you know, a taller seat, which allows the ability not to have to use as much force to get up and down. So at first you think, I don't know, how's that going to look next to the island? You know, you're going to have this island. I don't know if it's 30. I can't remember whatever inches. And you're going to have a table at the same height. You know, again, you don't normally see that, you know, you don't want to see a table's lower than the height of the island, but from a functionality standpoint, the usability, that was something that we made sure we did in the kitchen.
Right. And there's so many different looks and styles to furniture that, you know, you can find someone, even though the height may be a little unusual. I'm sure you found something that looks really nice.
Yeah, sometimes it's tough to get that. And, you know, we had someone make a table for us. You know, we picked out a piece of wood and they made the table for us. So, you know, lead times, you know, took a while. But, you know, it's of course, that's the whole world's been that way for a year. To get anything takes forever.
That's true.
We just got our sofas the other day for the family room. And same thing with those. You know, when we picked those out, you know, what was the most important thing was the height and firmness, you know, so that you're not sinking in something. You know, I spent a lot of time in South Florida fishing, and every time I go to Miami, I swear everybody likes to sit on the floor because I call it the Miami effect. Everything's about 8 inches off the floor. Oh. I'm like, who designs a sofa like that?
Wow.
But very, very modern and chic, I guess would be the term.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Just to highlight a quick other couple of things.
Sure.
You know, dual handrails on all the staircases.
Again,
you know, we've got an elevator, but, you know, and when you put those in, again, ripped them out, lots of wood blocking, really secure, you know, just in case. We did a home generator system, mostly because of the elevator. That was the biggest thing.
Oh, so you smart.
Know, you know, power's pretty stable here, but, you know, Murphy's Law has it that when I need to get out of the house, I need to be able to use the elevator.
Absolutely.
And then the final thing that I think I could tell you that we did that I think has really been beneficial was we put an integrated smart home system in. And so, you know, what do I mean by that? And so all of our lighting, all of our security, all of our door locks, all of our TVs, stereo, sound, are all integrated through one electronic system that's controllable by either a handheld remote, your telephone, by an app, or on like a tablet that's mounted to the wall. And the way that started was, and of course it morphed into a bigger project than, you know, how building is, you know, it morphed into something bigger, but I reached out to multiple electrical contractors and I said, I want to have a lighting system in the house. And the reason behind that was that if I was here alone and I was leaving, I didn't want to take 30 minutes, which is what it would take me to go room by room and turn everything off. So
yeah,
we have it's called an Elon system, ELAN, you know, not just not trying to plug them, but just, you know, what it is.
It's what you've
got. It integrates everything. You know, I can hit a button and all the doors lock. I can hit a button, the garage doors close or open.
Wow.
Thermostat control. I can literally, I'm sitting at my desk now, but I can literally sit here and control basically everything in the house. I can shut the lights off. I can lock the doors. I can turn the music on, TV on. Yeah, I have four kids. So you know what that's like. You go to leave and you're out, you're pulling out of your driveway and you look up and you see that, you know, all the lights are left on.
27 lights are on. Yep.
And so that was, that smart system to me was probably one of the most important things, because I didn't want to have to find myself, you know, having to go check all the doors. Are they locked? Are the light switches off? Did the kids leave the TV on with their video games or whatever it was? Ironically, I can shut it all down when I go to bed too. And then the kids, you know, password it out. Can't turn it on if they don't want.
Right.
But, you know, we don't do that. I mean, we joke a little about that. I'm like, we can shut it all down. But I think that, you know, if you are building a new home or you are doing a renovation, and accessibility, you know, from a mobility standpoint or a disability is a big deal, definitely invest some serious time into some of the technologies that are out there, because it makes your life so much easier. You know, if you're sitting in the chair and you say, hey, you know what? I'm watching TV in the family room and the kitchen lights are real bright. Now I got to get up, turn them down. If you can just take your phone, it kind of makes you feel a little lazy. But on the flip side, you know, us with this voice, you got to get up and out of the chair. You got to move over here, go to this room.
So handy.
What seems like it's just a regular thing for someone without a disability, just to get up and walk into the next room and turn something off. For us, I always say it's, it can be like running, you know, 5 miles,
absolutely,
you know, for them.
Yeah.
So technology, you know, just, you know, I think it's so important. And if you do it during a renovation or you do it during a construction process and you plan it, and I spent a lot of time with our technology representative, you know, talking about, you know, the disabilities, talking about, you know, how do I get the lights to adjust? How do I, you know, and exterior lighting was another thing. You know, we have, you know, we have full perimeter lighting, down lighting around the house, so that, you know, I poured concrete all the way around the house so I can walk around the entire house. My primary residence that we will eventually move from to here. I can only go on the driveway. I can't get around the house. It's grass. It's mulch beds.
Sure.
And I wanted to walk around my house at the end of the day. So, but when you do that, you know, I put like a little soft glow lighting that goes down and it's controlled by the smart system. And that way, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, I could be walking and if his guard goes there and I kick it with my foot, I'm probably going to fall, you know?
Right.
So just where most people, it doesn't even affect them, or there's a rock, a pebble, and you step on it, you know, it's, that's what we deal with, living with muscular dystrophy. So technology, I think, is something that a lot of people don't look into. You know, they think after the fact, you know, after the fact, oh, let's, you know, how am I going to control this light or this TV? Or, but we planned it on the front end. And again, it morphed from a lighting and door lock project into a whole home system. But yeah, you know, certainly, I would say one of the best things we definitely did was investigate and invest in technology to make the house, what's a quote unquote a smart home, but you know, make it smart, because it makes it so much easier for me. So that was a big thing too.
Definitely. And I've even heard of smart home technology that will adjust the blinds in your windows and things like that.
So we actually have those on order right now.
Oh my gosh.
And that integrates through the system. You know, we kind of got in and said, just get some paper blinds up now. But you know, that's just like turning the lights off. You know, if you have four blinds in a room and you're mobility challenged and you've got to go get all of those closed, that's a lot of work and a lot of effort, you know, so that was important. The other thing we did, we used the pre-engineered flooring. It looks like wood, but it's really vinyl. It's real popular right now. There's a lot of different manufacturers out there. We use the Cortec brand. But, you know, for me, that was really important. That's in most of the house. And I think that it gives you a good solid surface to walk on. You know, someone told me not too long ago that some of the biggest trip hazards for people in homes were shower curtains, bedspreads, and area rugs. Those three things. So, you know, we did glass doors in the shower. I'm not an area rug fan.
Yeah.
At all. And you know, just to make sure that your bedspread's not this big overflowing bedspread that when you get out of bed, your feet get tangled, twisted, or whatever it may be.
Great point.
Those are the three things that someone told me a while ago were the three most common home, if you want to call it trip or slip, you know, issues out there. So, you know, that and, you know, our carpet, and we did do carpet in the bedroom in a couple of rooms, and, you know, all that's low pile Berber, you know, thin pad below it. So it's, you know, if I get in a real plush carpet, I feel like I'm walking on sand. If I walk in sand, I guarantee I'm going to fall.
So, yeah, well, and same thing with a wheelchair. Wheels are so hard on carpet. You know, right. A month in and your carpet looks like a disaster because you've worn it down and gotten it dirty. So in my house, we've got mostly tile probably in 90% of the house.
Right, right.
So, yeah. Well, this is fascinating. It sounds like you've been incredibly thorough, like I said, and incredibly creative, visual. I can't thank you enough for spending
your
time and your expertise with us.
It's great. No, and I appreciate it. And you might put a plug in for our fishing team if anybody's out there and they can follow us on social media. You know, we're constantly increasing awareness for muscular dystrophy, and it would be great. It's Fishing for MD, you know, or you can just Google fishing and muscular dystrophy, and we come up all over the place. There's YouTube videos, other podcasts, or our hashtag is FFMD. And if anybody's out there and they can follow us on social, you know, we always appreciate it, and it helps us continue to, you know, our quest to increase awareness and what we feel is a really, you know, big demographic area of the boating fishing community.
Perfect. And we'll put all of those links and things in the show notes as well so that people can be sure to find them. Well, thank you again, Paul. I appreciate it. And
yeah, but thanks for having me. Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. Thank you for listening. For more information about the guests you heard from today, go check them out at mda.org/podcast. And to learn more about the Muscular Dystrophy Association, the services we provide, how you can get involved, and to subscribe to Quest Magazine or to Quest Newsletter, please go to mda.org/quest. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd be grateful if you'd leave a review. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button so we can keep bringing you great content and maybe share it with a friend or two. Thanks, everyone. Until next time, go be the light we all need in this world.